Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 81. My name is John Morgan. Finally back in the house is my man Cole Coffee. Good to have the crew back together, and I'll tell you why in just a second. But let's address it first, right out the box. Cole Coffee, we're supposed to be in Manila right now. We're supposed to be chilling in the Philippines, having an ice cold brew in a Crystal Dragon bar at a fine upscale property.
You know, getting those cheap massages and all that other good stuff.
Dude, we were that's the life that we're supposed to be living. Instead, my friend, you are the captain of dive bars. You have done well, my friend. We're at Boomers in Las Vegas, which is right around the corner from your home, literally just across the street from the Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah, just on the other side of the 15, close to the UFC HQ, soon to be the old Zuffa headquarters.
UFC HQ, yeah. Man, this is like a world away, man. This is like reminding me of some – it feels good. It feels like I'm not in Vegas at all right
now. Like
it
feels like a little neighborhood bar. Yeah. You know, it's got pool tables in the back over in the corner. It's got a little stage here if there's a band. Yeah, it's not bad. And actually right around the corner is that little Digit place where they have like the bulldozers. You can go and do stuff, but it has the extra lot. And that's where if people pay attention to the season that had Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Claudia, they did the coaches challenge where Dana was up on the platform and they had the dunk 'em.
Where we were scared to death.
Where we were scared to death. That's just around the corner, just down the end of the street here. So kind of gives a perspective of where we're at. But, yeah, it's like a little neighborhood sort of bar. But
I dig it, man. They've got two-for-one frosty beverages this evening.
Thirsty Thursday night. I had no idea. But, you know, we were going to do this at the house, and then I was like, you know, let's – it just felt odd because, you know, we should be in a much cooler location than my place this week. So I just felt like I wanted to get out of the house and go somewhere else. So here we are, Boomers, you know, and, yeah, it's a good little hole in the wall, you know. So I make it my mission to keep showing you new dive bars
in
Vegas.
So if you're ever in Las Vegas, if you want to look up myself and Cole Coffee and you want to meet for a frosty beverage at Boomers, we'll do it. If not, just come visit yourself. Impress your friends. Be like, dude, let me show you what I know about Vegas.
That's right. You will get some kudo points. They'll be like, I never knew this existed.
Yeah, and literally we're 5 minutes away from $8 beers, and we're drinking like $1 beers. So if you're not fancy and you're cool with a dive bar, man, I will sign off on Boomers.
There we go.
All right, so Manila, not going to Manila. You and I weren't together when this thing got canceled. Started out with a BJ Penn injury. You know, a lot of the reports were that the drug testing was a big part of it. I actually heard it was less about drug testing and more about just the whole overall situation. You know, you got the president of the Philippines coming out comparing himself to Hitler and making these, you know, kind of anti-Semitic remarks, and just a lot of upheavals going on. And I actually heard it had more to do. I think almost what ended up happening was BJ Penn getting hurt maybe wound up being a blessing in disguise to some degree, where they're just like, you know what, let's just say cut our losses and let's get out of there so nothing bad happens. Because I think, you know, talking to people behind the scenes, man, I think a lot of people really worried something bad was going to happen over there.
Yeah, and I don't know. I hate to speak from a selfish standpoint where it's like I love going to places like that. I mean, it's such a unique opportunity, and it's one of those things that I think is probably one of my favorite parts about the job. I mean, granted, right, I love covering MMA, I love all that, but you know, the opportunity to go see these countries and do all that stuff. So I was definitely let down, but you know, it's unfortunate. You know, I could definitely see their policies, you know, where, you know, maybe if that is the case, you know, they don't want to, you know, in retrospect have people look at them and say, I can't believe you were supporting that regime, if it does come out that this guy really is doing all these, you know, I mean, from what I hear, he's doing good things that a lot of Filipinos are appreciating.
Just in a crazy way.
Just in a crazy way, you know, that eventually, you know, people might look back and say, hey, you know, the guy was wielding a big stick, but, you know, could he have done it, you know,
it's
maybe
like
a
saying,
little bit better.
It's like saying, we're going to fight crime, and the way we're going to do it is, it's going to be like the movie The Purge or whatever. Just like, you know what, there's just going to be no rules for the next couple of days. You guys just go kill anybody you want, and that's how we're going to get rid of crime.
You know, I don't know. It's unfortunate, you know. I was really looking forward to that. But, you know, again, this is, what, the second time that I can remember where they've canceled a show. And I know that internally, granted that was a pay-per-view that canceled, but having another show cancel, I don't think they're going to reap as much problems, or maybe, I'm sorry, not reap, but lose as much when they lost the pay-per-view.
Right.
That I know while I was still working for the company, you know, they were trying to wager that and say leverage that to say, oh, we're not really going to be able to give out bonuses like we could and all this other stuff. I don't think that will affect them maybe as much internally, but it's never good when you have to cancel something for that particular reason. So I'm sure there was other stuff going
or
on.
Rescheduling, as the official announcement came out.
Rescheduling. Yeah. Rescheduling it for a date. Not this year, probably.
Never to happen.
Yeah, so I don't know.
I got an extra week at home anyway. It's going to be weird, man. 3 weeks in a row with no UFC events. You know how long it's been since we had 3 weeks in a row with no UFC events?
It's crazy because, I mean, I know part of us, I mean, we're in such a routine of, all right, what's the content going to be for this week? We've got to do this, this, this. And, you know, a lot of times those weeks are already kind of laid out for us. You know, we try to think of the new and unique stuff that we can do outside of the fight week stuff. But now you take the fight week stuff and it's like, oh, okay, well, that takes 75% of the coverage and the content and stuff that we're going to create, maybe even more than that. Now what we're going to do? You know, we had a thing like today where we'll talk more about it, where they had the media lunch with Henry. So it was almost like, well cool. We got something. We got something
some
done
kind of
today, you know. But granted, that's not the most timely stuff. You know, a lot of that stuff we're going to sit on until that fight gets closer, you know. So, yeah, how do you make up for the fact that we have this gap? And it's like, oh, shoot, how do we keep creating new stuff, especially video content? That's our world that we live in, or at least that I live in, you know. What do we do when there's no event? You know, nobody wants to just see us shoot each other in a random wherever. If there's no fight, you know, nobody wants to see stand-ups or whatever, just talking about whatever.
Nah, they want to see the fighters.
You know, they want to see the fighters. That's what it's about. So, I don't know. Maybe we can think about maybe trying to do some gym visits this week or maybe next week. You know, maybe
might
go to Extreme Couture.
Yeah.
You know, maybe go out to – we never did go and – maybe wrap up with the boys out there at
Syndicate. Yeah.
Maybe even just do some stuff out there. You know, might be something that we can get their feedback on some stuff. You know, maybe talk about some of the topical
checking
stuff.
With our boy Angelo Reyes.
You know,
maybe
we can put – I'm thinking maybe next week you can maybe put your fantastic fingers together and dial some of those people's numbers so that if Jose does come into town next week like he's supposed to –
yeah.
Maybe we can schedule a little.
I like where your head's at.
A little sit down or something. I think that might be good if we can maybe do something.
All right. Well, that's good. You got a lot of stuff. See, this is what's good about being back together, man. It's been too long. It's
yeah. You've been hanging out with the B Squad.
It was so long that you were being pissy towards me. I can only imagine it's because you missed me so much that you had to give me attitude while you were gone. But I will say I deserve some of it. If anybody listened to episode number 80 and a half from Manchester, just know that I screwed that episode up so completely bad from a production standpoint. Not having my man there with me on point to handle things, I had to be fill-in producer. And not only once, but twice I screwed up the recording. Once I let the record – I had the same piece of equipment that Kenny does here. Like, oh, sorry, who's that guy? Cold Coffee has here to record everything. I had the exact same piece of equipment. Once I let the battery die.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough one.
And the other one, I let the memory card fill up.
That's a big one. That just goes to show, you probably never look at this little screen here.
Nope.
You know, you can see that there's the battery thing, and then there's your timer.
Yep.
See? So that's knowledge. That's what beers and boomers does. We pass the knowledge.
In fairness,
right
it was like 9 a.m. in the morning, and
that's true.
I think I deserve a pass. But, yeah, so lost entire segments of the podcast because I didn't notice it right when it happened. So never got a chance. Like, we talked about Brad Pickett and Yuri Alcantara. We talked about that fight for a while. You never heard that on the episode because –
I got your notes. Your notes were like, oh, cut this part. And I'm like – and I'm listening to this. And I was like, why would he start it and blah, blah, blah. I listened to it, and I was like, he's talking about Pickett. I was like – they never started talking about Pickett, and I was like, oh, now it makes sense.
Yep.
You know, that sucks because, I mean, we've done that before where we've chatted, and I'd be like, oh, shit, I didn't hit record. You know what happens, but, you know, to go whole segments, I know how it is when you're super tired and you're just trying to get through it, and then you get caught up in conversation, and then you look down, and you're like, oh, God, there's no little red light
on. How about
on
that? Why is this off right now? About that?
Why is the counter
I didn't even
not
notice
moving?
The red light. There's something to look at in the main.
Yeah, so that's a little – that'll give you a little reminder.
That's how I know if it's recording
or not. That little red light there is meaning it's on. Because a lot of times I'll still check. I'll turn the light on
here.
Just to see the counter moving. But I've been training myself. If the red light's on, we're good. Red is good.
Nice.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Red is good when it comes to this.
Well, I totally screwed up. Fortunately, you were still able to stitch it together and give us something – but it was not it was not all that it was intended to be. I'd like to apologize to Simon Head, Shamak Karsandu, Abby Subban, because all three of them got hosed because there was points of it that I just didn't record because I'm an idiot.
I'm sure they don't care. They're all English.
It was a good week, though. I did want to say
mushy peas, damn it.
That tells you something about them right there. They don't even put any those things just need some damn salt, man. What's up
put some
that?
Seasoning in there.
Put some seasoning in your mushy peas. I did want to say this. One of the things that was brought up last week, and Cole Coffey, I know you were busy. You were out at the out camping, I believe you were at. So you were kind of out in the wilderness.
Yeah, I was out in the woods, man, doing some fishing, doing some camping. Me and Agent H, man, it was good. Got a little good suntan on me and stuff, and it was good. I think it's good to – you know, one, it's good to get away from the bubble that we all live in. I mean, one, we don't get out of the bubble enough, but just to get back to nature a little bit and, you know, figure out how to pitch the tent again, you know, besides the one you wake up in the morning and pitch a tent. This one actually with the stakes and whatnot, one that people can sleep in.
I can sleep in my tent, depending on who you are.
Just to get out there and get back to nature, you know, remember how to make a fire, you know, remember how to fish.
You were making fire?
Yeah, we had a fire pit, man. Like, it was dope. Well, no, I mean, I used a lighter, but I mean, I wasn't pulling out
so
flint.
So it took you a while to remember. Is it switched down or roll up? I don't.
No, you take it and you're like, oh, there, yeah, we actually saw a tarantula.
Oh, I'm out.
And then you could take the wood and you put it like in a little A-frame, like they tell you, and then you could put some little kindling and some paper and stuff under there, so all the fire goes upwards and goes up across the little triangle that you make of the wood. And then you can knock it down or whatever. So that's what I meant by, like, remember, sort of making a fire or whatever. Yeah, I wasn't, like, taking flint and, like, little brushwood.
Yeah, I thought you were, like, Survivor style, you know, out there.
But we did some fishing, too. Got out there, rented a boat, and went down the Colorado River, which is nice. You know, we stayed right there on Willow Beach, which is in Arizona. But it's right on the border. So on one side of the water, you're in Nevada, and the other side you're in Arizona and stuff. So you went and, you know, did that stuff. So tried to watch the fights, and it had the worst Wi-Fi at the campground. So, you know, pretty much it was struggling through. Then, of course, it dies right when it gets to the main event. And then I was like, oh, fuck. And then I was trying to stay off Twitter because I wanted to watch the thing. And then I was like, I don't care. Let me just pull up. And then I was reading all about it, and I was like, now I got to watch the fight. So it was good. I mean, I did eventually go back and watch it and stuff. But, you know, it sucked not being there, and it sucked not being able to really help out with you guys. But it felt so good to just get out of the bubble and get away and just go camping. And
I don't let myself get outside the bubble because I'm afraid I'll never want to step back in.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, there's been one story that I've been kind of tracking this week. Of course, everybody's been talking about the main event and the scoring and how they had it and all that stuff. It's been interesting. I've heard a lot of people in the media actually kind of coming around to my original score of 49-46. Michael Bisping just giving Dan Henderson a 10-9 in round one and then giving Mike the rest of the four. But God, it was a tough fight to score. I would be okay with a draw. I would be okay with a 10-8 in round one and giving Henderson round two as well. So, crazy fight. But the fight that the story that I've been following this week was, you know, I brought it up on the and a half episode that our own pair, MMA Junkie Pair, our photographer, noticed that in the first round there was no judge in the judge position next to him. The judge ran into position at the start of the second round. I actually went back to watching on Fight Pass because I wanted to verify what was said. And sure enough, you can see it plain as day in the Adriano Martins, Leo Santos fight. Right, there's no judge in the chair. And it's crazy because the camera angles that they pick, you can just see the empty chair plain as day, especially if you know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know? And then you actually see at the start of the second round, Judge Jeff Mullen scrambling to get into position like while the second round is already going on. So
wow.
Yeah, so I've kind of been following up on that. I actually finally got a statement. It's a fairly lengthy statement, but I just got a statement from the UFC, and I figure, hey, it's going to be up on MMA Junkie tomorrow, but the Roadshow faithful might as well get first listen to it.
Why not?
So here we go. This comes from the UFC. At the UFC 204 event on October 8th in Manchester, England, a judge was not in the proper judge's chair during the first round of the Adriano Martins versus Leonardo Santos bout. Judge Jeff Mullen was seated in the first row of the commission seating area and was observing the bout. Upon noticing that Judge Mullen was not in his appropriate seat at the end of round one, Mark Ratner, UFC Senior Vice President of Government and Regulatory Affairs, asked Mullen if he believed he could adequately score the round from his vantage point. Judge Mullen confirmed that he'd observed the entire round and that he could appropriately score the round. As a result, Mullen filled out his judge's scorecard for round one and took his appropriate judge's seat to observe and score the remaining two rounds of the bout. After the conclusion of the bout, all three of the judges' scorecards were tallied and the decision was announced. Although the bout resulted in a split decision for Santos, it is important to note that all three of the judges scored the first round 10-9 in favor of Santos. In order to ensure that a similar incident does not occur in the future, UFC has reviewed its protocol for starting any and all bouts that occur in territories that do not have an applicable athletic commission or federation. So, basically, I talked to some other people on the ground. What happened was, if you'll remember, there was one bout that was canceled. That was originally supposed to be the second fight of the night. Mark Diakese was supposed to be the first fight of the night. Things got scrambled around when we lost a fight on the scales on Friday. Judge Mullen thought that he was the second fight of the night, and so he did not go to his position in the first fight of the night because originally he was supposed to be in the second fight. Well, second fight became first fight, and so he wasn't in position. However, he was in the front row. He wasn't in the back eating a sandwich. He wasn't, you know, taking a pee or anything like that. He was actually watching it, and they asked him, you know, were you watching close enough that you can award a score here? And he said, yes, I can. Scrambled into position, got in place in round two, round three. Now, the question I have, and I'm asking, and I've asked a follow-up, but obviously it's after hours here, you know, the statement closes with, the UFC has reviewed its protocol for starting any and all bouts that occur in territories, blah, blah, blah. My question is, okay, you reviewed it. What changes did you make? What did that result in? And I should have an answer to that tomorrow. And obviously, as we do every week with the MMA Roadshow, we're recording on Thursday night. We'll put this out on Friday. So you'll see this on the site at some point on Friday. But I thought it was very interesting that the UFC, you know, kind of admitted what happened, admitted there was an error. This does fall in line. I was talking to some other people around that this is kind of what they observed as well. But I will say, you know, it was a split decision. It was, you know, kind of a back-and-forth type fight. I will say I was not watching this fight very closely because, if you remember, I was having incredible internet issues to start out with. So Brent Brookhouse actually did the Q&A, or the Q&A, the play-by-play for MMA Junkie while I was actually working with the IT people and PR to get internet set up. So I haven't watched this fight closely. I've heard some people say that they were cool with Leo winning. I've heard some people say that they're not, that Adriano Martins should have won the fight. But I will say this, I mean, I think Adriano Martins has a legitimate reason to ask for a no contest, you know, when you consider that a judge wasn't in the right position. And he says, yes, I was watching the fight. Yes, I was. But, you know, I wasn't – how closely was he? I mean, was he really watching it the way he would do it if he was in that judge's chair? I don't know. So I thought this was a very interesting – it's not something you see very often. And it was in the first fight of the night, and it's something that could easily slip under the radar. But I think hardcore fans that are really into the sport and really want to track every piece of it, I think this was interesting, and I'm interested to hear what the UFC does about it, because Kevin Sataki was the referee, and you notice at the beginning of every fight, the referee looks at all three judges, looks at the timekeeper.
You would think that he would.
Well,
I mean, if that's not part of the protocol, I mean, right. I think that's a check that they need to have to do. I mean, now if it's a matter of the UFC checking, yeah, I mean, that just seems like a huge miscue on their part that if they didn't already have that check beam, because if not, I know he looks over at the timekeeper.
But maybe it's just a cursory, like, I mean, when has the judge never not been in his chair? You know, like maybe I looked over, but the dude was like leaned over, you know, picking something up off the floor. Like, are they really looking to make sure that the guy's looking back at him?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of times now these guys, the refs are so cued in when it comes to the broadcast and the time. They're looking at the guy that's checking off on
some
of that
shit. Oh, they got to make their little signs or
you
whatever.
You know, and that's the thing, you know. Like, they're so worried about TV a lot of times. I think they're forgetting about maybe the basics.
That's true, because they're having to watch Niners cues over there.
And that's why I think
Niners, the guy that works in the production team, he's the one that's calling the shots, communicating.
That's why I think they're really looking. I think they take for granted the fact that the refs aren't – or that the judges aren't in their seats. And now it's going to have to be – a visual check where they need to keep in the top of their head. Am I looking to see if the fucking judge is in there? I mean, I don't know. I guess on scoring, I think it would have to go back and look at the scores for the other ones. Even if he possibly got one judge to maybe give it, you know, 10-9 in his favor, and there were two other judges that had 10-9 the opposite direction, without those two other scores, it might not be even – I mean, the other two rounds in his favor, you know, I know it was a split or whatever. It might not – you know, I don't know. I guess if it was a split, so he ended up getting something. But I don't know. You would think that if they did mess up, but then that the UFC would have to point out, since it's another commission, another country, where usually they have to maintain
right.
I don't know if it's different in England.
In England, there is no commission. So
they'd
UFC
have to admit
to
that they
themselves.
Fucked up, and they don't want to do that, you know. I mean, maybe they could just make it all right and just say, hey, we're sorry. Here, we're going to give you your win money
bonus
as well and just go away. You know, and maybe he's
and
willing,
we won't cut you.
But he might not be – yeah, he might be willing to take that even though, you know, he has that L on his record. A no contest might be a little bit bigger. But, yeah, if they get the agreement of, we're sorry, we messed up, here's your little thing, we'll just leave it as is, and you're guaranteed another fight.
Yeah.
You know, I mean –
it's interesting. I'm going to get the follow-up. I'm going to get the follow-up hopefully tomorrow.
That's a big mess up.
It's a big mess up. And, again, you know, I originally said I think, you know, in my heart I wanted to believe that the judge was at least close by and was watching. I mean, because here's what would be worse is if we found out that the judge wasn't anywhere close. And I did verify with multiple people that he was right there.
Yeah.
And that was before I got the statement. But I wanted to know, like, once I got the statement, I wanted to know, like, is the statement they're giving me bullshit or is it legit?
But it was the first fight of the night.
It was the first fight of the night. But I did verify with other people that were there that he was in his seat. He was in the commission row, which was, like, right there. So he was there. Because what would have been really bad is if you'd have found out, like, the guy wasn't even there, but yet he had a score for round one. You're like, what?
Yeah. And being the first fight of the night, you know, they probably hadn't had enough time where they can get comfortable, start chatty with the people next to him. He probably was, in all honesty, sitting there like, hey, the first fight, I'm going to watch it.
Right.
You know, so he probably was watching. But, man, you would think he would ask somebody or somebody didn't get – just thinking, hey, let's look over in that chair and make sure that one of their own isn't in the chair.
Crazy,
you know, like,
right? Crazy.
I don't know. Maybe that's something that, that they have to check off. I mean, and it sucks. Maybe here in the commission – when they do the things here in Nevada and the actual commission takes it, maybe they have a person, you know, using one of those tickets that they love to have out of those million tickets, that their sole job is, let's make sure that there's a judge in a seat. Here, they don't have that because it's the UFC that's doing it, you know. So I don't know.
Be interesting. That's what I want to hear. You know, they said, hey, we reviewed our protocol. What answer did you get? What's the change in protocol now? Is it on the referee?
We're going to pay attention.
we're going to
pay attention.
So I'm interested to find out. That's why I want to get the answer. And I think once I have that answer, that's when you'll see a story on MMA Junkie. There's one other story that I wanted to follow up a little bit from the prelims, actually, as well. Mike Perry versus Danny Roberts. I don't know if you had a chance to see it. Great fight. Great fight. Back and forth. Say what you will about Mike Perry, but the dude put on a show. Danny Roberts was there to bang as well. But coming out of it, Mark Goddard, good friend of the MMA Roadshow, fellow Nando's fan, has got me hooked on the chicken livers. you know, he went to social media. He got criticized very heavily for not stopping the fight soon enough and allowing Danny Roberts to take a few extra shots on the ground. And he actually took to social media and Facebook and Twitter as well, I think both, and just said, listen, I'm sorry. I made a mistake. I was wrong. This was definitely my fault. I should have stopped it earlier, and I didn't. And, you know, I apologize, and I'm learning from my lesson. And I thought that was a big move on his part. I was like, man, that's the reason I like Mark Goddard. You know, somebody that can just say, own up to their mistakes and say, I made a mistake. You know, here's what I'm going to do to fix it moving forward. But, bro, man, he's been getting death threats.
Really?
People have been messaging his wife on Facebook. That's ridiculous, man. That is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, well, I hope those people are that passionate about everything in life. Maybe when they see, you know, people doing things wrong at the supermarket, that they go after those people with as much fervor, you know. I mean, get a fucking life. I mean, I understand that, you know, maybe if your fighter, your favorite fighter got done wrong. But, you know, mistakes happen. You know, these guys are humans, and they're in a very, very tough job. And the fact that he came out, apologized, doesn't make it right for that point. But the fact that he addressed it and wants to go back and wants to get better – Mark is a nice guy. I mean, they're in such a tough job.
That's all I want to hear from any ref, any judge. And I know they're not supposed to talk to the media, but I kind of wish they could, because that's all I want to hear. I just want a referee or a judge to say, you know what, I made a mistake, I know what the mistake was, and I'm going to fix it.
Yeah,
because
that's all you can do.
You're humans. We're all going to make errors. I mean, do I think that, you know, I do play-by-play on a weekly basis. Do I think that I've scored literally every round of every fight, like, properly and the right way? Like, I don't make mistakes, man. I'm John Morgan. But the fuck no, dude, I've messed up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think for a guy to come out and be big like that and admit he made a mistake, thank you. I appreciate that, man. Oh, the frosty beverages are coming.
Tell you,
here.
Lisa the bartender is
Lisa's
on it
doing
here.
Well. But for a man to come out and say, listen, I screwed up. Here's what I should have done differently. I'm gonna learn from this. I care about this. Like, to me, man, That's all I want to hear.
That's all you need. I mean, it sucks. Again, I mean, I'm sure a lot of these people that are upset are fans of Roberts or just fans of the sport, maybe just don't like Mark or maybe some of the past things, you know. But to take it as far as to issue death threats, to try to hit up his wife, I mean, that's just – that's shallow. That's ridiculous. It's shitty. I mean, and it'd be one thing if he never admitted that he made a mistake, if he never went back, whatever. He's trying to be the better person about it. I bet – I mean, is Danny pissed off? Is Danny holding grudges?
No, he said – in fact, he talked to Danny, and Mark, who's been refereeing for 17 years, said that he's, like, watched Danny grow up on the regional scene.
Yeah.
He's refereed him and judged him at, like, multiple levels. He said he went and apologized to him, and Danny was like, what are you talking about, dude? Like, it's all good. Don't even sweat it. You know what I mean?
I mean, I would say people should probably follow his lead. He was the one that had the, quote, injustice done to him or whatever. I mean, if that guy is big enough to realize, hey, shit happens, whatever, and I'm over it, I think everybody could take a lesson from that. I mean, and to take it outside of that and to take it away from this guy and start looking into his family and bugging his family, I mean, that's just –
that's wrong.
That's wrong. It's that's terrible, and somebody should probably do the same right back at you.
Yeah. Right. All right. Well, listen. Funny moments on the way home. I flew home from Manchester. I had to go through London Heathrow and then London Heathrow to Vegas. And who was the last person to get on my plane?
Sean Shelby.
UFC President Dana White.
Oh, really?
Flying commercial, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Is he back in coach with you?
You know what's funny is because on the short, it was a British Airways flight from Manchester to London Heathrow. It was only like an hour and 10 minutes or something like that. But it was a plane that had no levels of service. Like, it was just one level. It was coach only. So he rolls in, you know, him and the posse that rolls with him.
Did he buy the whole row?
That's a good question. He might have done that. You know what? He was actually behind me, so that's kind of funny.
He's like, all right, I'll sit coach, but I want all the row.
So he flew coach to Heathrow, and then from Heathrow to Vegas, of course, he, you know, that was a big, you know, 777 or whatever. He had first class, and everything was taken care of there. But, I asked him about it. It was kind of funny because I was like, bro, are times getting that bad? You know what I mean? Like,
you made 400 and some million. You can afford a different plane.
Like, turns. And he was just saying that, listen, you know, if depending on how many people are going and that sort of thing, like long haul flights like that on private, it actually makes more sense financially to fly commercial. But I did get a little chuckle out of that. And then it was funny because we flew into Terminal 3 at McCarran. And, you know, so he, you know, obviously he got out of the plane before me because he was in first class. So I got the baggage and rolled right through baggage. I saw him sitting there and I was like, all right, man, well, you know, safe travels. I'll talk to you soon. But it was funny. He said he's laughing. He said as soon as he went through security, immigration, the first thing the dude in immigration was like, why aren't you traveling private? You know? He was like, I'm good, bro. He's like, I guess everybody thinks I lost my money playing blackjack already. You know what I mean? So I thought that was hilarious to see Dana rolling in coach, man. It was pretty much a trip.
That's funny, even to hear the TSA getting in on it.
Yeah, right? Even TSA was on. The other thing is I talked to some people, kind of going back to the Manila card. I thought this was interesting because this is something I'm sure you can relate to. The cost of canceling an event. I talked to some people that, you know, obviously we kind of end up on the same planes as some of the reduction people. And some of them pointed out some interesting thing to me, talking about the Manila card. Those people on the backside, all the people that work for, like, ConCom and all the production people, they're all contract workers.
Yeah.
So when Manila gets canceled, sorry, $0 for you, my friend.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times they'll take jobs working other sports or, you know, other, like, events or whatever. But, of course, you know, there's no time to react in the short notice. I hadn't really thought about that, though, man.
Yeah.
You talk about, you know, of course, everybody thinks about the fighters. Everybody thinks about what those people lost. But I was told, I don't know if this is right, but I was told ConCom flies 90 people. 90 people to an event. Seems like a lot, but then you start
like
to think
lot.
About it. There's a lot of people there. But that's a lot of people that lost out on a week of pay.
Yeah. That sounds like a lot for an international. That sounds like an awful
well,
lot.
Well, you're right. That's a lot for Manila. They probably weren't flying 90
to Manila. I bet they weren't
Manila.
Flying that many. I mean, here in the States, because they pretty much fly the whole crew wherever it is. But in the overseas, I would imagine it's just a fraction of that because they're going to use local hires at the venue.
Yeah.
And it might have – I don't know if they have union. I assume they have unions in other countries. I don't know. Or maybe it's government workers. Or they usually have to have some sort of mandatory amount, I think, of – local workers. So I bet, but they have the main people. They have their sound guys. They have their
main engineers. So what, maybe 30 or
40? That sounds about right. Even when you look at their production, like the staff, when they have those production meetings, there's 10 to 15 people just in that darn thing.
Yeah.
And those guys aren't doing the heavy lifting when it comes to in the show. I mean, I'm not saying they don't do what they do is important, but they're not the guys setting up the cameras and doing a lot of the other stuff. And granted, a lot of that could be local stuff. But, yeah, I mean, there's still people that are missing out. Like this month, typically, they probably take for granted the fact that, there's a UFC event every week, so they're getting nice, steady paychecks.
But this was a month where they were already 2 weeks off.
Yeah, and now there's another one. So this will be a rough month for someone.
And the other thing that I was thinking about, too, is especially with those 2 weeks being after Manila, and I know it affected some of the UFC people. I can name names, but, I bet it worked out for the production people, too, that a lot of people probably planned vacations on the tail end of that, like, look, yeah. My flight has already been covered to get over here in Manila. Now all I have to do is pay a connection to Bali or Thailand or wherever. What I mean? Like, I know that sounds ridiculous. You're costing my vacation, but it is interesting to think about like the ripple effect that probably people never even consider.
I mean, it's when you think about the fact that to fly a place like that, $1,000, $2,000, it could be more depending on how far. So the fact that you can get a front leg of it pegged or part of it pegged to make it work with a work trip, that's huge. So a lot of these people and all these production guys, they plan their say if there's one vacation trip the year, they plan around these big trips. So, it's one of those, the fallouts that you don't really think about, but it does affect people. I mean, some would say, that's too bad. You can't get to whatever. But, think about if you saved up and you really had one vacation a year and all that goes to shit because your job changes, whatever, it affects everybody.
Yeah.
So even if you're 1 year, you maybe were going to plan to go to Wisconsin and you planned up all year and you saved up for it and then something happens and it falls out, it affects you. It sucks.
Well, first of all, you're shitty at planning vacations if you were going to Wisconsin.
Hey, Wisconsin's dope, yo.
It is pretty up there. During the summer.
I was going to say Wisconsin's not for everybody. I like it up there, but I knew you were going to shit on it. I love Wisconsin. But and it's
so
hard
Midwest
to do it.
Through and
I'm
through.
So, I love the cheese and the milk and everything. But granted, some people would say, whatever. I don't ever get a vacation here, whatever. Most people do or don't. But still, there is fallout that you don't normally think about that does affect. I mean, this is a big traveling circus, and there's a lot of lives that are intertwined in this. And, when people are able to take a work trip and then are able to carve out a little bit of holiday time where they can spend with their loved ones and go whatever, that makes the rest of the year and all that other time away from them a better thing. It sucks when that falls out, it goes a long way because, I know a lot of people are stressed. It's a tough job to follow around on the road show or whatnot. And, everybody needs a little bit of downtime. And if you can, be able to go to some cool location that you never thought you would, but because the UFC set up an event and you're like, hey, we're going to be in the neighborhood, let's do it. It just makes so much sense. And, I don't know. It sucks. I was really looking forward to get back over there. The birthplace of my mom, both my brothers were born over in the Philippines Clark Air Force Base.
That's great.
I
knew your mom was there. I didn't know your brothers were there, too.
Well, that was when dad was still full-on military whatever and stuff. But, brothers were born to Clark Air Force Base, Manila.
Crazy.
So, now I don't even think it exists anymore. It's called something else, Clark something. I don't know. But whatever. So, I'm always glad to get back there and
Well, we got plenty more coming up. I just finished our airfare for Sao Paulo. Just finished our airfare for Melbourne. So we got stuff going on. Speaking of how hard the road show is, if you like what you're listening to on the MMA road show, you should definitely log into iTunes. You should take a second to just rate us and review us, man. Just do that. I like reading those. I haven't gotten one in a little while. I like reading those. I like shouting them out. I like getting the feedback. So if you've been on the fence, you've been thinking like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I want – people don't want to care what I have to say.
Yeah.
We care what you have to say.
Even the emails. We got a great email recently. One of the guys, he chimed in, and I won't name names or anything like that, but was just even giving a little Brazilian feedback. you know, and he gave the feedback. I don't know if you saw the email.
I did see
but that. He was just like, you know, like, and this is cool little stuff. Like, I love when readers give clues to, you know, whatever, the areas.
He's weighing in on the Alex Oliveira stuff and about how, motherfucker.
Yeah, or like son of a bitch.
Yeah, son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch was like, is like the worst thing that you could say over there. And like, it's akin to pretty much, it will start a fight. You say that out in the playgrounds, you say it wherever, it's going to start a fight. And I just thought it was interesting. It was neat to hear a Brazilian that lives in the States or whatever kind of giving us the clue. So, I mean, I love that stuff. I love the feedback. You guys write us an email. You do whatever. We're going to read it, you know. And who knows? Maybe we'll talk about it on the
damn,
next show. Or whatever. But I love that stuff. I thought it was great that he took the time to reach out and give us a little feedback and give us a little insight. I mean, we certainly heard it in Sioux Falls or wherever we talked about it. They were like, well, let us tell you about our town.
I love that. And I'll tell you what, man. I had so many people in Manchester, A, come up and be like, dude, I love the podcast, and B, like, where's Cold Coffee? You know what I mean? Yeah, cool.
They love my accent. My British accent is lovely. I'm just kidding.
Please.
Did Carly ask about me?
Carly was definitely.
She was sad, huh? She was probably crying.
Hello, mister.
Hey, mister man.
Carly's the best, man. She's awesome. People missed you, dog. They wanted to see you.
I missed it too. I mean, you know, I'll have to make a way over there because I certainly love going over to England. So we'll have to figure a way, one of these bigger shows or something. Even though that was a pay per view, to get back over there.
Yeah, maybe we can find a bigger show than a sold out pay per view.
Bigger show than a sold out pay per view. So we'll see. We'll have to work that out.
All right. Once we got back, it was funny because I didn't even – I was tired, and B, I needed a day off. But Monday morning was the NSAC meeting where was it Monday morning? Tuesday morning. Monday morning. Yeah, it was Monday morning because that's what we were supposed to be on our way to Manila.
I was like, shoot, why didn't we plan on covering this?
Because we were supposed to be on our way to Manila. Yeah, the NSAC meeting, and Conor McGregor ends up getting a massive fine, $150,000 fine. Extensive community service. It was, you know, this thing was on Fight Pass. It played out for the world to see. I wanted to get your take on it because I gotta say, I think I'm gonna be on the controversial side of things here and say that while it sounds ridiculous to say that a guy got fined $150,000 for throwing a water bottle, I'm kind of okay with it, and I'll tell you why. I'm okay with the concept of a percentage fine of your base pay being how they judge what you're fined. Now, the thing I hate is the whole, like, why don't you know, let's make him do community service, let's make him shoot a PSA, let's make him do all that. I don't like all that because to me it sounds like they're just making shit up. You know what I mean? Like, they're just totally making shit up as they go.
I can see that.
And I don't like that. But I'll tell you where it first got me was – now I'm going to tell you where it first got me. I can't remember. There was a boxer. God damn it. I think it was Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. tested positive for marijuana.
That sounded like a made-up name.
Yeah, totally made that up. No, it was Julio Cesar. I believe it was Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. tested positive for marijuana. Now, first of all, my thoughts on marijuana. I don't think anybody should be testing for that anyway. But you can't test positive and then argue after the fact. You can campaign for reform before the fact, and you can try to get it changed, which it has been changed. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the competition angle has been changed and all that. But I don't think it should be tested for that anyway. But that doesn't matter. The thing was, they fined him like 30% of his purse. And because of that 30%, which was kind of standard for a failed test, why are there little tiny glasses of liquids coming this way?
Are these fireballs? Oh, good Lord.
All right, well, it is what it is. That's what happens around the MMA Roadshow. You do this. All right. Should we just go ahead and do this now?
Yeah, why
just
not?
Get this out.
Agent H, you're terrible.
Well, I'm good. I'm okay with fireball.
Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, Governor. Cheers. Oh, it's warm.
A little chilly.
Yeah,
That's an entirely different experience.
I like a chilled fireball. A little room temperature fireball. Not quite as good, but
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad.
All right, so the thing was, he got fined 30% of his purse, and that 30% of the purse, now here's where I'll definitely get off, because the numbers were like $300,000 or something like that. He had a massive purse. So the fine ended up being huge, and people freaked out about it. And so they went back and they changed it. They revised it. They're like, yeah, you're right, that's too much. And so they revised it. But to me, I do think that when you're going to have punishments, I think there needs to be consistency. And I think that's one of the things that people hate about the NSAC is they feel like the punishments aren't consistent. Now, so I kind of liked the process that they went through. When John Jones and Daniel Cormier got in their brawl in the MGM lobby, they were fined 10% of their purses, okay? 10%. So that ended up only being $9,000 for Daniel Cormier. I believe it was it 50? Yeah, $50,000 for John Jones, if I'm remembering that right. And so what they said was, you know, when they were kind of going through their whole process, it was like, well, listen, 10% is probably about right, but there wasn't actual physical contact here. Now, they still put the public in danger. There were still issues here,
mm-hmm.
but there wasn't physical contact, so let's go with 5%. And unfortunately, Connor had that – well, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you're looking at it, Connor had that huge $3 million guaranteed purse. And so he ends up
How the lawyer tried it initially,
right,
saying,
to get it to 1 million.
It was a million originally.
But so they end up with $150,000. Now, on the surface, to say that somebody got fined $150,000 for throwing water bottles – sounds pretty ridiculous.
Sounds ridiculous.
I mean, you and I were there in that room, and it didn't get out of control, but it could have gotten out of control. And so I do understand why the commission felt they had to send a message. And while it sounds ridiculous, am I wrong in saying that at least they applied a consistent penalty? And that, you know, I don't think you can do dollar, because if you say, well, listen, if people have a press conference incident, we're going to fine you $5,000. Well, $5,000 to Connor is a nice dinner. You know what I mean? Whereas $5,000 to, you know, a lower-level USC fighter, after taxes, if they lost, you probably just wiped out everything they made, you know? And so I don't think you can just pick a dollar figure. I feel, honestly, like percentage is the best way to go.
It does. When you put it like that, it does. I know initially when I was feeling it, I thought it's ridiculous, because if you take another fighter in a different situation – you know, they would probably fine them, you know, $20,000 or $30,000. Even that sounds crazy when you think of somebody paying a $20,000 fine for throwing a bottle. You know, the fact they are doing a purse, I can see that the percentage, you know, if it does, you know, it does put a little consistency, because I guess it would be tough to say, all right, we're going to say if somebody does something and endangers the public, it's going to be $50,000, because a lot of guys might not ever have that, and they're going to have to find a way to pay that. So I can see why they do the percentage. But the thing that gets me about it, and maybe if there were, maybe people would be a little bit cooler about it, and maybe I'm wrong thinking about how it is. The fact is, the main people that benefit from these larger fines and these fees is solely the commission.
Well, it does go – it's supposed to go to the general fund of the state.
Yeah, it, whatever. You know, I mean, so in a sense
– I'm sure the general fund and the people in the government look fondly upon money coming in.
Yeah, because the way that it made it seem when, you know, when they were trying to send the commission and trying to put out the money, they're like, all right, well, let's earmark 50% of this is going to go to the general fund.
Right.
50% is going to go whatever. So it's not like they're automatically saying, okay – this money goes to the general fund. It sounds like they're able to allocate within their own system how much is actually going to the fund.
Right.
They vote upon and they do whatever. So here's a group body that's able to levy fines where they initially benefit. So it's in their benefit to levy these huge things. I would say if there was only a maximum amount that could actually go towards the commission, where all other money either has to go maybe to a legit general fund where they can't
right. they
that's can't,
where it's supposed
they can't,
to go.
They can't divvy it, or
they're
it has to go
to
out
have
to
any control of it. They're not
well,
supposed to have
we
any
saw right
of
there
it.
They did, you know. I mean, we would think that all 150, if it's supposed to go to the general fund, that's supposed to go to the general fund. Hear them already saying, all right, we're earmarking 75% or 75,000 is gonna go to here. So it's like, okay, well, so now you have somewhat of control over this thing, or they vote on it, or whatever.
It's kind of like Pride back in the day issuing yellow cards and deducting a purse 10%. You know what I mean? Like that. What do you mean? The official can deduct 10% of my purse? Like, of course they're going to try to screw me. You know?
So, I mean, if there was a limit to maybe to what they can even have a say, say if there's a matter where, one, they can't touch the money, they can't set limits, they can't do whatever, and they can penalize like that. Say if they wanted money to do the thing – they could make that as part of the thing and just say, all right, you're penalized for this, you know, as part of your penalty, you must do a thing, whatever, and it have to meet this thing, and then you're fined a certain amount.
Right.
And that fine goes to wherever. So the fact that they can already start divvying out whatever, it just
it's concerning,
because then all
it
of a sudden
it looks like you're self-serving, like, you know,
self-serving.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be a whole nother thing if they couldn't control any of that money and automatically, or there was a limit. Say if they want to be able to operate and have money within themselves, they can only say there's $150,000. You're maxed out at whatever, no matter what. 20,000 can only go to wherever, where they can't touch their hands and everything else. Because then I think you're not going to see these exorbitant amounts because they realize that they can't touch it anyway. So what's in the point to make these outrageous amounts, you know? Because now it seems that they can – I just – to me, it felt like they were already thinking, like, all right, wow, this is a huge amount of money. We haven't seen this guy fight in a while, so we haven't got a lot of money coming in or whatever. Let's get this huge amount. We can use part of it for this, part of it for that. They're already thinking of ways. If you take that away from them, I think we maybe won't see some of this crazy amounts. It just seems that it's very self-serving.
So I agree with that 100%. They should not be able to touch the money because that you start to get very concerned about what you're, you know, are you trying to pay your own salary? Are you trying to, you know, take care of your own budget? So I definitely agree
that's
with that.
That's what I saw. That's what I thought the general fund was their money paid
the
out of
the
general
fund. But general fund is legitimately supposed to go to the state, like literally the state of Nevada. Like that, like Conor McGregor's $150,000 could be used to pave our roads.
Do they have to publicize where they put that money? Where
they
it all
don't
goes?
Because it basically just goes to the top line of the state's budget. And so at that point, it's just like state income, and then it could go anywhere.
But it would seem like we would be able to verify or be able to see if it actually did ever enter the coffers.
Oh, that you would. No, that I think you could through a public records request. You could definitely find
just
out where it went.
To see if the money actually
but that's why
is.
They say it goes to general fund. Like, it's literally just the state's budget. So at that point, it could go to pay for school teachers.
But the commission's budgets, that's a line item as well.
It is a line item.
So it would be interesting to see if that changed.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what sort of
fines that would be interesting. What did the budget start at and what did it end at?
Yeah.
It's a good point. So, so I agree with that. The money should not, because if the money's going to the commission directly or indirectly, then it's bullshit because now you don't know what their motivation is.
Exactly.
It can't go. Now, if it's going to pay for roads or pay for teachers
we
or
need
whatever.
We need some help on the roads.
You know what I'm
here.
Saying? That would be cool. Oh, to go down to Mexico, man. Oh, my God. It's rough. So that's one. Now, all right, so that brings me back to my second point. Or maybe it's actually back to my first point because that was the second point. But even though it sounds insane at $150,000, like, I kind of almost applaud them that they were trying to be consistent with the percentage.
And it doesn't
feel like you're trying to make shit up. It's like, dude, listen, you know what I mean? You broke the rules. Here's the policy. We've done it before. We're going to do it this way every time.
I mean, they tried to do it with the 2 years. You fail, you got 2 years.
Right.
Now you fail, you get 4 years. So I definitely see that because you're right. If you put a dollar amount on it, all of a sudden you could ultimately be ending one guy's career because he can never come up with a dollar amount where another guy might be like, chuckle, here you go. Let me give you that right now. Let me just take it out of my pocket change.
Right.
You know, so I guess I can see that. And because we saw that with Daniel and we saw it with John. John was in a whole different ballpark when it came to the money that he was getting.
But it seems fair, right? Like they were in different income level. I don't know.
Yeah.
I know that sounds weird and I'm not trying to – like, I mean, I don't know because I don't know that they deserve – I don't know. I just at least I like the fact that they're trying to do something consistent.
Well, maybe you could clear this up because I didn't realize it as well. So say so this money. They say, Connor, you got to give us $150,000.
Right.
What power do they have to actually get that money?
None.
I thought that as well.
None.
But some Adam Hill and some of the guys today were like, no, they can come after him. It's a government agency. They can come after him.
They can, but, like, there's – no. Really, they have none.
So
basically,
if he never fights in Vegas again, he never has to pay that $150,000.
Right. More than likely.
That's what I thought.
More than likely.
That's the same thing with, like, boxing sanctions. They're like, oh, you want to be the WBO holder or whatever, you have to pay the licensing or
now,
whatever.
Now, more than likely, now here's the deal. Like, you know, so the whole thing about boxing commissions, and maybe people don't necessarily understand this, like, so it's good that you bring it up. Like, all the commissions are technically independent. Like, they're not under a federal umbrella. So, like, California, Nevada, New York, Ohio, everybody operates independently. Now, they have a kind of a gentleman's agreement where they're like, listen, we're kind of all in this thing together, So if you, you know, issue a suspension to somebody, I'll honor that same suspension. But it's essentially a handshake agreement. Like, yeah. There's no re- – like, had the commission been like, you know what, Conor McGregor, you're suspended for 2 years. You can't fight in Nevada for 2 years. You know, he's already booked for New York at 205. The New York Athletic Commission has zero responsibility to honor that commission. Now, if they want to honor the commission's decision to suspend them,
you think they would say no?
Hell no. Hell no. With all that money that's
Nevada,
coming in.
We appreciate your thought process, but that was a different situation.
Yeah, and you know what? You're right. He shouldn't fight in Nevada for 2 years.
He can fight in New York every year.
He can fight in New York every year. So I do think like in some ways – that I do think eventually like federal oversight is needed to ensure that there's not issues like that. But for right now, yeah, there's no federal oversight. So, long story short, they do have the power to like essentially go through a collections process. But everybody I've ever talked to is like the teeth on that is just nothing. Now, yeah. If he wants to fight here again, absolutely. They just say, you're not fighting here. You're not getting a license until you pay that fine.
Yeah.
But, and I think he will. You know, he said – via Dana, that he doesn't want to fight in Vegas anymore. And I can understand that, especially right now. I'm sure he's incredibly frustrated, but I don't believe that. I think he'll fight here again.
I mean, he also raised a point. I mean, if it comes to pay-per-view numbers, people are going to buy it, whether it's here, whether it's in New York, where it's whatever. I mean, it's not like he's getting a percentage of the door, you know? I mean, it's not like the biggest venues are here anyways.
That's true.
You know, so he could do it in other countries. He could do it other places.
He's only getting a percentage of pay-per-view.
He's only getting a percentage of pay-per-views. People are still going to buy him. It doesn't hurt him at
all.
He
does love bragging about the gates, but at the end of the day,
I mean, literally,
it's the pay-per-view that pays
him. He could fight anywhere in any country, any random-ass city here in the States, and people are still going to buy those things. I mean, we get people coming out of the woodworks. I get my family asking about him. We get people that don't really care about the sport. You know, people – you know, other guys in the even our own organization that don't normally follow MMA that are like, what's going on with Conor? You know, what's going on with Ronda? There's those people that move the things that they'll sell it regardless of where it's at. So
our general sports editors are like, can you get a day with Conor? Like, oh, yeah.
Of course.
Dial that right up.
Of course. How big's your checkbook?
Well, it's crazy. I'll be interested to see, you know, once he finally does. He did send out that tweet. And I think his first interview will be interesting to see what his feedback is. But fortunately, on the MMA Roadshow, you don't have to wait for the first interview. You don't have to wait for the first interview because Cold Coffee, I don't even ask how he does it. All I know is that my man has the hotline. And I say, you know, Cold Coffee, when we get in positions like this, you've got to be the one that gets the scoop, man. You've got to get the first feedback right now. So I've got to imagine he was fired up, Cold Coffee. I've got to imagine – when you dialed up your boy C-Mac or whatever you call him.
It is C-Mac.
Is it C-Mac?
Is that how you figured that out?
That's probably how it is in your phone. I've got to imagine that he was fired up. Without me even listening to it, just lay the audio in right now. What did he have to say?
John, it's fuck.
Wait, did you play the Michael Bisping track? What was it? I'm sorry, hold on. Go back. I think you queued up the wrong track. Go back to your audio files. I know producing
I might have misplaced it somewhere.
Yeah. To dial up the right one because I think that was the Bisping track.
I don't know if I can find the Conor one anymore.
It's key. It's got to be there. It's got to be there.
It's been so long since I put it in there.
That's what she said.
Now you got H&H blushing here.
Maybe you could – did Joanne Calderwood weigh in?
John, I think it's a –
She just randomly trailed off like fake words like that. Amazing. All right. Well, sorry about the audio problems, guys. I thought we'd have some awesome audio there, but sometimes when we're producing on the air like that, it's tough, man.
It's tough. I didn't bring the right computer files.
We didn't have the right gear. All right, so let's talk about your day today, man. I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out there. I had a very important lunch at the UFC headquarters today, and that's all I'm going to say. I had an important lunch. I had
you
a
shouldn't
meeting.
Shouldn't tell them that you're the new VP
I had a meeting.
Of PR.
Well. Shouldn't. Now you just ruined it for me.
Fuck.
They told me if it got out. No.
I guess you didn't get that position anymore.
Yeah, I had a meeting that could end up being some very good things for both MMA Junkie and the MMA Roadshow moving forward. So we'll keep those under wrap for now because those are things that are in progress. But you, my friend, while I was doing that, you were chilling over at the Palms, kicking it with Henry Cejudo.
Yeah, Henry Cejudo came over there, and you know, he'd been running around doing a bunch of media stuff today. And we actually he did some radio hits, and then he did the MMA Junkie Radio co-hosted over there with
Mike Pyle,
which is always great. I love seeing Mike Pyle. Or hearing him in this case.
Right.
So, yeah, he did the show with George and Goes and then came over. Wasn't the biggest media turnout, but he was in good sorts, you know. We sat down and had some food and, got to talk a lot of stuff. So got to ask him a little bit about, you know, coaching, you know, what he liked, disliked, you know, what he found out. We got him to talk a little bit about his experience at the, you know, yesterday we saw the Tough episode came out where they did the coaches challenge at Top Golf, and it was brutal.
Love me some Top Golf.
It was brutal. I still need to get over there. Haven't got there.
So we
talked a little bit about that. But, yeah, we got to sit down and talk with Henry and just picked his brain a little bit.
So we'll just hear a little bit of that now, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't watch it. I watch it on my phone.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll be honest with you. Last night, I watched bits and pieces of it. And then the Wi-Fi at the hotel was really bad, so I couldn't watch it. Because we get it sent to us. So, but I saw the, like half of it, and then I caught Dana. And then that was about it for yesterday's show. So I'm going to have to watch it today as soon as I get Wi-Fi.
You watched the past?
Yeah, I watched all of them.
Yeah. I guess how would you compare your season to other seasons as far as it's a totally different dynamic, obviously, with the better people experience and changes, but I guess was there a season that you really enjoyed, or was there something looking back and you said, like, oh, our season's kind of like this one?
I think the only one that we could really relate to was, I forget the season number, but it was when Matt Serra won a Tough. Where you had all these elite athletes training, because this isn't your average, this isn't a developmental Tough program where personalities get a fight one time in the UFC. I mean, these are the guys that are dreaming since they were kids to become, you know, an ultimate fighter, a world champion. So it's a whole different dynamic because a lot of these guys, they don't bring drama to the table. You don't see it as much. And the bits that you do see on TV is probably the only thing that really happened inside the house. Because these guys are trained professionals. These guys know how to cut weight. These guys know about nutrition. These guys know about recovery. Like, it's impressive how much he could actually take from you. As much as you can give knowledge, you can give them, you can also take from them as well. I mean, they got these remedies, and it's just crazy.
How much easier is it on you that you're not dealing with a bunch of kids? You got, like you said, they're professionals.
Don't get me wrong. Sometimes they act like kids, especially towards me. Can't catch a break, man. I feel like Sage Northcutt in a freaking. I feel like a sheep in a wolf's game sometimes. Just like, damn, why are they tripping now? Because I pronounced somebody's name wrong. Or why is Demacia still hating me a year and a half ago? Like, this is like just crazy stuff. Just like, I'm not used to this stuff. Like, I'm more that dude that'll stay in his lane, funny when he has to be funny, will interact when he has to, but. I'm not out there freaking poking people, and that's not my style. For one, I'm not a good crap talker. I just can't. I mean, you guys can see it on the show. I don't know what to say.
Have you ever been in a position though before where you've been an authoritative figure as a coach or whatever? Is it more difficult than you thought it would be going into this?
Absolutely, man. The one thing I learned about the show is coaching. I'm a good clinician. I can teach very well. I can simplify things very well. But to coach is just another different level of just respect. And I respect my coaches more, like, you know, because they're hands-on. As a fighter, it's a very selfish thing. It's about you. You do you, and it's about you. You sleep at your time. You take naps. You eat at certain times, and you go talk to whoever. If they fit in your agenda. And this stuff is like fighters are cutting weight, fighters need this, fighters need that, fighters need certain things, certain stuff. So it's crazy for the first time in my life to actually put myself last and it was a great experience, man. So to sum all that up, what I just said is like coaching is not for me. Like I don't see myself in like coaching like mixed martial arts or wrestling. It's just it's too much, man. I think it consumes. And I see it with my brother. My brother has a wrestling club in Phoenix, and I help him from time to time. But it consumes his whole life is just around the sport of wrestling. His whole family's life is around the sport of wrestling. And kudos to everybody who has to coach. But what I've learned from the show is not for me. Nor is probably reality TV.
Even outside of this,
or golfing.
we'll ask you about the golfing. Well, first we'll talk about golfing since that just happened. Come up in the episode. You watched the show. Was it painful? Did it bring back moments when you were watching it? Because you can see that you were having fun with it at the time, but you're like, I can't believe this is actually happening. That we're doing this thing.
No, I can't believe it was an actual challenge. Is what I'm saying. It's like, dude, this is. I feel like it was premeditated. It's like, all right, come on, you can. Like, let's pick something that's neutral that you guys think that we may not do. But the sport of golf, man, I'm such a impatient person. Like, that's the last thing I want to do is put something in my hands because I'm going to tear something or rip something or tear something on myself. And I've never played golf before, so that's probably, like, the most swings I've ever taken in my life. And I did miss, like, 10 swings. So that wasn't video editing. I was trying, man. But that's my sense of humor. It's like, all right, if I can't beat you, I'm gonna laugh. I get giggly, man. I don't know if it's because I get nervous or because I'm losing or whatever, but it's, I tried, I did my best, and I suck at golf. I don't know what else to say.
But you know, golf is a good game. It could help you if you got serious with it mentally.
Yeah.
For you, even translating to your sport.
Right. I think anything, man, anything. And when I've learned, I have a level of respect for every sport, bowling, fishing, like there's an art to everything. And that's something that I used to overlook. I was like, man, that's okay. There's luck involved at times, but for the most part, man, it takes a certain intellect, mind, body, and soul to be able to hit the ball and be able to hit it directly or close to the target. So to me, I was just like, oh, I'm gonna ram that thing. I was like no, I'd hit it and it'd go that way.
What do you feel the dynamic between you and Joe?
On the show, or I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe you guys can answer that. I think he's a little more aggressive than I am. We're just two different characters, man. I used to be like Joe, like very competitive, like everything was like I want to be the alpha male, but it's not like that for me no more, man. I feel like so much good things have happened in my life and bad things have happened. But at the end of the day, man, I think all that stuff has built me to the person that I am today, man. So there's contentment in my life. So I don't know, that's a hard question because he don't like me. I really don't mind him. I don't like him either. Like it's like that. I don't hate the dude, but we just like.
I saw an interview where he mentioned that he actually likes you less now since you've worked together in the show. Do you feel similar also? Do you like him less? Do you feel like you want to fight him even more now after spending some time with him on the show?
Yeah, that's weird, man. And I told this to Paige, and I know it sounds weird what I'm about to say, but anybody that doesn't like me, that doesn't know me, it's like, man, you're crazy, man, because I'm a chill person. I love to laugh. I live, laugh, and I love, man. I don't hate nobody. I'm not envious of nobody, like, That's just who he is, man. Like, I don't know how to. And they even tell me, like, that whole first episode, I talked to Joe, and I talked to him, I gave him a hard speech, man, about him. It wasn't even necessarily him being a role model or a leader, but more importantly, what I tried to convey to him was, like, dude, don't be a bully, man. Like, he's trying to bully me. Like, he's trying to Joanna Yang joy check me for the next 6 weeks. I'm like, I don't want that. I don't want my family to see that, because then for me, there is pride in me. Like, I'll start fighting. Like, there's another side to me where I do have layers, where you poke me enough and it's all right, talking's out the window, dude, forget December 3rd. And I didn't want that. Cause man, I got pride too. But what I didn't want from his side is for him to be portrayed as a bully. And that's kind of what's going on now. I feel or I sense. And that they didn't edit that whole thing. And I think he kind of actually took that to heart. Because after the rest of the 2 weeks, he didn't really say anything to me. Because I said, man, like, dude, being a bully here in America is like a freaking world epidemic, especially here in the U.S.
Do you think some of that is also then for the show, you know, kind of playing the role, trying to, like, mention Joe, you know, trying to play that role to make it shine more?
I think he genuinely doesn't like me. I think he genuinely doesn't. I don't know if it's envy. I don't think so. He just doesn't like me. I guess he thinks I'm fake or whatever. Like, that's the least, man. People that know me, that's the least word, like, that people actually ever use against me is fake, man. I'm the most genuine person. Fuck. I let people stay in my house, man. People that don't even know. Like, I'm just, that's just the way I was raised, man. You know, it's just, it bugs me because it's like we both grew up eating rice and beans, man. Rather than helping each other, we're freaking, you know, it's like brown on brown crime, if you want to call it. I don't know. But anyways, you guys like drama, so.
How do you see the fight playing out when you meet him? How do you visualize
him
playing out?
I don't want to give any game plans here, but I visualize myself, you know, sticking to the game plan, to what's according. I feel like I'm a better athlete, got better wrestling, striking. I'm a fearless human being. I'm a competitor. I love to compete. I see myself beating Joseph Benavidez.
What about the anger part? Talking about, but in any sport, you've got to keep that in check no matter what. I mean, you don't want a guy to get under your skin because it takes away from you as a fighter. People get angry, or people are fighting a bar fight. You're not like that.
Nah, you become methodical, man. I've competed in so many different parts of the world, man, through the sport of wrestling. I'm used to this stuff. Like, I'm used to, shit, we can fight here. I don't care like that. I use all that negativity as fuel to the fire. It makes me more methodical, more strategic, more technical. Like, I'm not gonna go out there emotional. If anything, you'll see me moving, pumping my fakes. Like, I'm smarter than that, you know? I'm not gonna be emotional.
Welcome back to the MMA Bros Show. That was Cole Coffey chilling with Henry Cejudo at lunch this afternoon. Big fight, man. I'm not going to lie. I'm looking forward to that tough finale, man. That's still a ways away. We got a lot of travel to do between now and then. But once we get back in town, I'm actually looking forward to that. We get to see the title fight. Demetrius Johnson is going to be fighting against TBA. We don't know who he's fighting just yet. We're going to see that all play out. And then we get to see Henry Cejudo and Joseph Benavidez. I'm looking forward to that. Like I said,
it should be good.
It'll be a long time on the road. Man, Ellenberger and Masvidal is on there. There's going to be some fun fights.
Yeah, man. I admit, man, like, it's so tough to, like, catch up with all those the Ultimate Fighter shows. I finally saw them. We happened to sat at a bar last night. That's funny. We're at a bar again tonight.
Shocking.
We're not really.
Shocking.
Yeah, but just seeing all the cats on there, I didn't realize they're on there. Like, who is it that fought last night? It was Tim Elliott
yeah.
Fought, and then, you know, I love seeing Damasio Page, like, seeing all these cats, like,
yeah,
I really feel like I need to go back and, like, start
this
season.
Good. I've been watching.
Have you been watching? And I know you haven't. A lot of times you haven't watched a lot of.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, man. I mean, I'm about as hardcore as it goes, but all the traveling that we do and stuff like that, like,
it's tough to keep up with the serial show.
Some of the past seasons are tough. Yeah. Now I will say this, like the regional ones, like the Tough Brazil, yeah. Tough Latin America. I binge watch those right before we show up. All I watch is the fights. I don't try to watch all the. I binge watch the fights just so I have some idea of what's going on or whatever.
Yeah.
But I've actually been watching the season. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
No, I need to go back and watch it. I mean, just for the fact of the level of the guys that are fighting on this one. I mean, I felt bad, but yeah, when I was watching, I was totally into it, and I was like, oh shit, here we go. Now I got to go back and watch. You know, yeah.
Speaking of oh shit, here we go.
Fireballs again. Yeah, Agent H over here tapped me. She's like, should we get three more? I was like, all right, why not?
Well, I mean, if it's buy one, get one, you can't have an odd number, right? So you can't do...
True.
You can't do three. So the simple math.
That's all right.
Simple math says we want more. I mean, it's just cinnamon.
Just makes
fresh.
Sense. Just makes sense. All right. We'll do these real quick.
Here we go.
Cheers. Cheers. Go on, give me a cheers in an English accent.
Cheers.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
Better than yours.
It was better. All right. Ooh. Yes, and let us be the first to say, drink responsibly. That means drink cheaply and lots of it.
Yeah, drink responsibly means don't spend a lot.
Yeah.
I should have mentioned, I didn't do a good enough job of describing this at the very beginning, that, I mean, you've basically been playing, like, video poker while the show's going on.
Well, I did stop once the money ran out, but no, Agent H is still going. She just re-upped, so we're gonna try to win a little bit more. But
that's what's up.
These slots, besides being a nice neighborhood sort of feel, just to give a clue to a lot of people, should they come to Boomers, the slots are pretty loose. They do pay out. So
I'm always a big fan of loose slots.
Yeah, right.
All right, big news this week, man. We've been talking about it for a while. We had heard that it was happening. It finally became official. Ronda Rousey,
yes,
returning against Amanda Nunes, doing it on December 30th. I guess, first of all, man, I mean, probably not shocked by the news. We knew it was coming. But, I mean, just now that it's official, Cold Coffee, are you excited about it? And I don't know. What's your feel? It was big news, man. It definitely dominated the website, and then it definitely dominated, like, mainstream kind of sports,
yeah,
as well.
It did. No, I'm happy. I'm excited to see her back, just for the sheer excitement that it brings. You know, it gets more people talking about the sports. I mean, let's be real. Before Connor, it was people talking about Ronda, mm-hmm, you know. So, no offense to, you know, I mean, there'll always be people that, you know, say that the spectacle gets away from the real nature of the sport and all this discipline and effort the guys put in, that sometimes the spectacle can overtake that, and a lot of these people don't get the recognition and get seen like they should if it wasn't, you know, because of all this other hoopla that's going on. But granted, on the flip side of that, you know, a lot of these guys are getting more notice if they happen to be lucky enough to get on these cards, mm-hmm, because of these big names. And but Ronda was one of the first people that really just blew it out of the water. You know, I had family members, you know, sisters, moms, you know, whoever, brothers, just like, oh, Ronda, 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 you know. So for her to come back, you know, I think it injects some more energy back in the sport, takes a little bit of load off of us waiting around for the next Conor fight. You know, now we can get back on waiting to, you know, get a Ronda show in between, yep, or whatever. But also, it'd be interesting to see, you know, the answers to the questions of everybody's been kind of saying, where's her mind at, you know, 100%. Has she been training, you know. I think, you know, you got some people on one side of the fence saying that, you know, they thought pretty much the time off was, they thought she was going to try to start a family, or was just really going into her movies, or just really was so depressed that she just couldn't keep with the fighting or whatnot. So,
yep.
But I know one thing about Ronda, just from following her and seeing her in this sport, is that when she is focused, when she is all about it, she is probably one of the most focused people I've ever seen when it comes, mm-hmm, to the effort level and the determination and all that other stuff. So I think if her mind is there and she did make the decision, like, she's ready to go, and even if that just happened 2 weeks ago or whatever before this all started, there's enough time that she will get herself in shape. She will get herself ready. To put on the best show that she can against, and what she will need to, against a dominant and just fucking powerful Amanda Nunes. I mean, right, like, she is incredible.
So a couple things. All right, so much to touch on here. But first thing, so her fighting on December 30th. December 30th is probably the worst pay-per-view slot that there is. You know, mm-hmm, so I think a lot of people wonder why. You know, why the UFC put her on this card? I will say this: I was told this is the date she wanted. She didn't care about what it meant in terms of pay-per-view buys. She's like, this is the date she felt was right for her body, that was right for her plans, that was everything was right for her, and that this was not a situation, because I've heard some speculation that, like, the UFC came groveling, like, we need you out. Come on, we need you back out there. We've got money to make. Mm-hmm. I've heard it is anything but that.
Yeah. And
she definitely, you know, went into seclusion and hid away from the world for a while, processed everything, and now that she is dialed in and focused and, like, cannot wait to get back in there. So I think that's interesting. But, man, as you said, dude, when you think about what Holly Holm did to her, you,
yeah,
know, you think about, you know, how that went down, and then you think about what Amanda Nunes did to Miesha Tate.
Yeah.
And I know you can't do that MMA math like that, but holy Christ,
yeah,
dude. Like, I mean,
it was even more devastating.
It was way more devastating
than what Holly did to
it
Ronda.
Was it was way more it was, devastating.
It was probably one of the most lopsided battles
up
we saw this year.
Straight up just beat Misha up.
Yeah.
Straight up just beat her up.
And, I mean, we're big fans of Misha. I mean,
hell
like,
yeah.
She is as tough as they come. That was probably hands down the most lopsided fight of any
shocked.
UFC fight this year that
I've
ever
seen. Knowing, you know, even going into that week and saying, like, man, Amanda's got power. Be careful. Never in my mind I see it going like that.
Yeah.
And so now you think about Ronda coming back. So here's what I think is incredibly intriguing. So Joey Odessa, longtime friend of MMA Junkie, longtime friend of MMA Junkie Radio, he actually set the first line on this. He opened Ronda Rousey as a 3-1 favorite.
Yeah.
That's
crazy. That changed quick, though.
I'm shocked. I'm
that
shocked,
changed.
Right?
That changed. Last I saw it was much less than that. I thought it was like, man, it was like a minus 175, and Ronda was like a plus 220 something.
Well, let me see. I'm signed into the guest Wi-Fi here at Boomers, with it, which is fantastic. Yeah, it's already been bet down to less than 2-1, minus 190.
Yeah, so people that got in got good, but I mean, that was crazy. I mean, I think one they're going to change because I guarantee so much money immediately flooded in on the opposite side. People
right.
are just like 3-1. You're going to give me 3-1 on Nunes? That's ridiculous.
I'll take that, right?
I'll take that.
That was a smart bet. Now, okay, now
you know, I tried to open it up in my gaming app immediately when I heard it was 3-1. It wasn't even on there.
So right now, it's just the odds I'm looking at right now, and I always pull up best fight odds just because you can see like a whole list. Now it's Amanda Nunes like plus 160, plus 170.
So it's even changed from earlier today, depending on where it is.
I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised if they make it a pick 'em by the time it gets closer.
Yeah.
I bet it'll be closer to a pick 'em.
I think so too.
That line is moving a lot. We still got a lot of time to go. I mean, it's still. I guarantee it'll still move. It'll still keep moving a little bit more.
I mean,
it might stagnate a little bit, but
I feel like we're gonna see a better version of Ronda. It's funny because you and I were, you know, after the announcement, you and I were working together. We were putting together a couple little videos and a couple little picture things that were kind of like reviewing Ronda's career. And man, you go through and you see what she did to people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you forget. I mean, I think that loss to Holly Holm has made us all forget like how dominant she was. I mean, she smoked people. But she's not going to be able to manhandle Amanda Nunes. I'm not saying she can't win the fight. I'm not saying that at all. But, like, I mean, that power that Amanda brings to that first round. I mean, just like any Amanda Nunes fight, the longer it goes, the more you favor her opponent. There's no question about that. But, I mean, Ronda's going to have to be careful. Like, this is – man, this is no joke to make your comeback fight against.
Yeah. It really – like, I think a lot of people are thinking that – for the comeback, they would have took a recent losing Misha Tate as opposed to Amanda. I mean, but again, you know, she's coming in. She had the one loss. She's in a weird. She's
I mean,
in
she
that
deserves
lucky position,
a title shot, right? Like she definitely.
Yeah.
Like I've heard people say, well, she doesn't deserve a title shot. Like,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, I mean,
screw you,
can't,
bro.
I mean,
it's Ronda Rousey. She deserves.
She can
shot.
Do what she wants. She's
Absolutely.
Done enough for the. She's done enough for the sport, and I mean. In any perfect world, she would have had an immediate rematch anyways. The way that they granted the recent champs that win that won that many times, they gave them immediate rematches.
Right.
That didn't happen. She went away. The belt changed hands, so it makes sense that this is her immediate rematch that's a year in the making.
Yeah.
You know, but I have no problem at all if they gave it to her. I mean, Ronda needs to be headlining a card. I mean, unless there's going to be another, like a Conor when they
do that's going to be the main
back
event.
Back-to-back. It's
going to
be the main event regardless.
Main.
And how do you not make a main event when you have a chance like this?
You're right. Conor would probably be the only person that would headline over her, right?
Yeah. I think that would be such a – wow, that would be a crazy card. But
yeah, that, they would never do that.
Yeah.
They would never do that.
I mean,
that'd
be
– Too many – it's too much of your resources on one.
In one thing, because then you got, what, nine more months or whatever, because you figure at that point they can't fight for 3 months. What are you going to do for the rest of the year, you know, for the other 11 months or whatever? But, man, it's going to be pretty exciting. I think everybody's going to probably be on the edge of their seat that first round to see if there's any – those nervous jitters. Shoot, I'm actually going to be interested to see the weigh-in because Ronda kind of wears her heart on her sleeve, and I think even the weigh-in with Holly – we saw something there. She just seemed a little bit off.
Definitely.
Like, was out of her normal sort.
The whole week.
Just kind of I don't know if Holly got to her by not really doing whatever. It's weird because it wasn't like Holly was going out and doing anything. But it just seemed like, you know, Rhonda had a lot, so much stuff weighing on her head that it just.
You got distracted by a big
poker. I know. Well, yeah, I thought she got something bigger, but she, you know, she got $20.
She thought you had something bigger, too.
Yeah, well, she didn't hit the jackpot there. But,
No, I agree. We'll probably never be able to get her to admit it, but I had actually heard that she was having a lot of difficulty just dealing with the time difference. She was having some real issues, like just getting her body synced, and she seemed mentally out of sorts anyway, man. It's that moment, man. We've seen it, man. I've seen Rhonda, I've seen her rise up close. I've seen Connor's rise up close, and man, like you can literally see the difference. I've asked both of them. I can remember that both of them. I can remember asking them, "Are you still having fun?" Because like there's a moment where they're smiling and they're laughing and like, "Oh my God, this is amazing." To then, like, all of a sudden it becomes a business and it becomes, like, a responsibility. And it's, it's hard to deal with that stuff, man. I think people kind of forget about that sometimes.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
I would probably try to – not that I'm saying, like, oh, let's feel sorry for them. They're being compensated justly. Neither Connor nor Rhonda never have to work again for the rest of their lives. And that's an amazing position to be in. But it is tough, dude. Like, they get to that position where – there's a lot riding on you, man, and it's not the thrill of the competition and the thrill of being here and, oh, my God, I'm so lucky and this is so fun. It's just like it's big business, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can – I've been able to I feel like almost pinpoint it in both of their rises, and it's just how can they deal with it, you know, and I feel like this is going to be a huge night for Rhonda.
Yeah, wouldn't it be something? Say she comes back, gets the win.
Right.
Gets the belt.
Right.
What if she then says, I want to take some time off again?
Nah, I don't think she will.
Or maybe just says, that was great, guys. I just want to come back and make sure I still have the heart for it. I could still do it. But I think I'm a step away from the game.
I think she's always – my understanding is she's always wanted Cyborg to be her last fight. Now.
She doesn't want to fight Cyborg.
I know. But can you imagine if she said – let's say she beats Nunes.
I love how Cyborg's been trying to chirp in her ear, though.
Oh, it's been great, right?
She's been trying. I don't know if she's ever really actively done it now.
If you're talking about her social media account, that's not her.
Yeah, but she – well, all right. I'm sure she's got to pay attention to that. She's certainly not like, hey, guys, whatever.
No.
But I don't know.
She has no idea what's going on social media, guaranteed.
Yeah, maybe not.
Guaranteed. But I will say
run by
though.
The people that run BJ Penn.
Yeah. Well, why should I hate on BJPenn.com?
That's not BJ Penn?
No, it's
he's not. BJ doesn't run that?
What?
It's got his name on it.
He runs it.
His name on it. I don't get it.
No. I think what would be sick though. Let's say she beats Nunes, and then she comes back and she's like, I want Cyborg, and then she somehow beats Cyborg and just walks away and she's done. At that point, like, you just write off the Holly Holm fight, right? You know what I mean? Like,
if she beat Nunes and beat Cyborg
and then said, drop the mic, I'm out, then you're like, she's the greatest ever.
Yeah. If she wanted to write that wrong or do whatever.
It's like Tyson losing to Douglas. He doesn't need to beat Douglas.
No. Douglas. He was from Columbus, so we were very, very excited, but then he just fell apart. Yeah, he didn't even need to be Douglas. Douglas beat himself after that one.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Honestly, for me, she's done enough. I appreciate everything that she's done. She could walk away from the sport, and I wouldn't feel bad for it at all. She's done great things. I'd love it that she's coming back. And if she did win, good for her. She came back and beat somebody that most people think that she's not.
If she just walked away after the – let's say she beats Nunes.
And walks away, I think it's fine.
Greatest ever.
Well, at this point.
At women's, yeah.
At least for what she's doing in that division. Because I still think Cyborg is probably by far the most dominant woman fighter that's out there right now, active woman fighter. So even if Rhonda did that or whatever, I wouldn't probably say – I would say she's the greatest women's bantamweight that's out there right now that nobody can touch her,
right.
And then that'll be –
because you're not grouping Cyborg in
there. I'm not grouping Cyborg in there because she's not a bantamweight. But if she would get that and then answers that question and meets catch weight, you know, or does something, split the difference so that she's getting to go up a little bit, she's not doing whatever. And if she really wants that fight, she can make that fight happen very, very easily. And if she was able to beat Cyborg, hands down, I would say she is by far the best, most dominant woman fighter out there. Because if she could beat Cyborg, there are no questions.
If
left.
She beats Nunes, I want to see the Cyborg fight. Like, I don't even care about the home fight anymore.
I
think the home fight would be great if we got it.
It'd be great because I'd love to see Holly make another big paycheck whatever. But no, I mean, I would much rather, even before that fight happened, even though people were talking about Cyborg, I wanted that fight then. And then they went with the home fight or whatever. No, I mean, after if anybody beats Cyborg, you can hang your hat and call it a career at that point because you beat the biggest, most dominant beast out there. That's just literally. I mean, it's.
But dude, I. Oh.
I mean, and then after
Cyborg
that point,
is a beast.
I mean, really, beast. What else does she have to? I mean, even at this point. She doesn't need to prove anything to anybody. I mean, at this point, I just want it to be for herself so she can get whatever. She's already the champ. People love her. She's done great things. She's done great things for the sport. To me, I already think that she's an amazing athlete. She's already an amazing winner. I don't need her to go even and fight anymore. I'm happy for her right now. But if she goes out there and does it again and she's happy with it and she wants to keep doing it, great. But, I mean, there's not much left for her to – hang your hat on. What is it? I mean, just to be like DJ and just say, I'm going to beat everybody again?
And I'm the least – I hate conspiracy theories. I hate conspiracy theories. I hate them. But I've had a couple of frosty beverages.
And a couple of fireballs. That's different for us.
Is there any chance that Cyborg – because, you know, like she's been releasing all that weight cut footage and all that stuff, right? I mean, in Curitiba, she made 139, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she was under. Is there any chance that she's doing that just to be like – to bait Ronda to be like, look at how awful my weight cut is.
Yeah.
I look terrible. I'm awful. If I had to fight you at 140, I'd be awful. Wouldn't that be easy for you? Look how drained I am.
She didn't really make 140 for the last one.
That'd
be 140, 1.6. You know.
The guy was there. He was just on the front row.
He was in the front row.
He was judging from over here.
You never know. I mean, ultimately, why not? I mean, because, you know, let's be real. You know, like most of the people that they're not walking around or at underneath weight or whatever. They're walking 10, 15 pounds, whatever, heavier. So for us to say, oh, you know, fighting at 140 is going to be such a disadvantage for Ronda, that's not the case. I mean, if anything else, she might even be a little bit stronger, you know, than what she normally is when she cuts it down even to 5 more pounds. But that also gives Cyborg some little leeway as well. But, I mean,
I wouldn't see that fight, man. I still want to see
I would love to see him. And what if Cyborg can get that shit and loses some muscle mass? Well, then she won't quite be the same Cyborg.
We're not going to see the 135.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either.
We'll see the 140. I mean, Pacquiao got laid out before we saw Mayweather Pacquiao, and it was still like something that everybody wanted to see, right? Like, I want to see it. All right, last thing I want to talk about real quick. Dave Schaller walking away from the company, leaving the UFC to go work for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Who's going
to
call the shows if he walks away?
I know, right? That's like, I put that in my story. I was like, and sometimes John Anik doppelganger. They do look bizarrely alike, especially when they have the same haircut. They look bizarrely alike. I know that you and Charlotte. I guess you and Charlotte kind of bumped heads when you still worked for the UFC, right?
Like, on
y'all weren't exactly boys.
No, we weren't boys. But at that time, he was just a PR dude running around with his PR shit and doing whatever. But no, I mean, it was just normal work shit. You know, we need to get in there and get stuff done. And then, of course, they're trying to do their PR thing. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it was really
you
bumping
just,
heads, but you know,
had different goals.
Yeah, it's all good.
Different priorities, but I worked with Schaller for a long time from his WC days on, and I guess the thing that I wanted to get about this was because I've seen a lot of people saying, "Up, here we go, WMEIMG," and here's what I can gather from being on the ground and considering that I was at the Zuff offices earlier today, and knowing that Schaller and I have worked together for a long time together, is that this was definitely not WMEIMG related. Schaller got an opportunity of a lifetime, basically.
Or was it?
Damn you with your conspiracy theories. I told you I hate conspiracy theories. Schaller got the opportunity of a lifetime to go work for his hometown team, and so he took it. You know what I mean? And, of course, a chance to bring his family back closer to family. Once you have kids, man, anybody that has kids can definitely relate. I never understood that. I used to have people that ask me, like, you know, my family's still in Dallas, and I've moved all over the country, and I've lived in Vegas for the last, you know, decade or so covering this sport. But, you know, I've had people say, don't you want to live close to your family? I'm like, why do I care about that? Like,
nobody wants to live in Texas.
Right. Well, get the fuck out, my friend. Other than the fact that I'm a proud Texan.
got some good barbecue.
They do have some amazing barbecue. I'm like, you know, it's no big deal. But once you have a kid, man, that changes. Because you just, you want – you know, your kid to have access to the grandparents. You want the grandparents to have access to the kid. Hell, let's not lie. You want the help to be, like, logistical about stuff. You know, when you need, like, hey, man, I'd like to have a date night with my wife. It would be nice if I had some family to come help take care of this. You know what I mean? Like, there's all those things. But I don't know. I guess what I want to say is that from everything I've gathered is that this was not a part of that. This was just Dave Schaller, who was highly respected in the company, getting a fucking opportunity of a lifetime and chasing it. However, with that said, I do still anticipate a lot of layoffs coming soon, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I have been. I mean, of course, you're hearing it from places, and we're hearing it from the same places, from different places. But let's make no bones about it, man. It sucks, but. There are people that are going to be losing their job pretty soon.
Yeah, and we've talked about it. And I feel like we've talked about it on the show, and I feel like, I don't know, our life blends in when I feel like sometimes we say stuff that is recorded and sometimes it isn't. But I know we've talked about it, so maybe we will talk about it to kind of end and wrap up the show. You know, we have heard different things and we hear different things, and maybe we can we predict fights. We might as well, you know, predict some of the things and the changes and stuff that we see. You know, but
I don't want anybody ever sitting back predicting the MMA junkie layoffs.
Well, that's true. Well, hopefully not.
That's the thing is, I feel shitty about talking about it. You know what I mean?
It's true.
I hate talking about it because, like, we're talking about people that I literally know. Like,
yeah,
we're talking about people that you and I literally know they're going to lose their job. But we also can't ignore it. We also can't ignore it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, because I think if you know, it's a two-edged sword because then you got people like, oh, why don't you ask this? Why don't you do this? And it's like, well, it sucks. You know, same thing why we don't want to do videos or shoot certain things when this is a friend, this is a whatever, you know, like nobody needs to glorify, but you're right. I guess we can. Yeah, maybe we'll just leave it at that. But, yeah, from everything we've heard, there will be changes, and this could be as wide-scoping as certain regional offices closing and reallocating some of the employees, and unfortunately some not getting that reallocation. And that sucks because, yeah, these are people we eat, have drinks with, go on the road with that we see, and anytime a company changes, but this is a normal thing for corporate takeovers and buyouts. You know, there is unfortunately a changing of guard in some situations. You know, that's just part of business. It happens, and to think that it wouldn't happen for this company in this situation would be wrong and a little bit naive. It will happen, but it's good to know that you know, Dave left on his own will and his own account. Or did he? No, I just want to keep throwing that conspiracy voice. But no, great for him. I mean,
did he?
But no, the NBA. I mean, we look at it too. I mean, like if you had to look in America in the sports, NFL reigns supreme. NBA comes in a distant but closer second. You know, the UFC is in a whole other area that's getting up there. So for him to get a position like that and to be in a good prestigious one that's got a lot of history. Good for him.
Yeah, he grew up as a fan.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that'd be like if I had a chance to go back and work for the Browns, work for Ohio State, you know, teams that I love and adore, you know, it's hard to pass up those opportunities. So
the Browns, you could probably pass up.
Well, yeah. You know, it is a, it'd just be me and Stipe at the one.
How much is he going to pay? can you like double
But it's
that?
NFL. NFL is pretty good, though. But you're right. But good for him. He's done a lot of good work, and he's got a great team. He's helped cultivate an incredible team.
Sure.
I mean, I know when we take it for granted sometimes, and I know when I cover other sports,
you know, the PR department there at the UFC is really pretty much one of the top organizations that's out there. And
they get
I'm
a lot of hate, but they're on point.
They do, yeah. And I'm not trying to, like, kiss ass or whatever, but I'm just speaking the truth. I mean, go try to fucking cover a boxing event, and especially a boxing event that has multiple promoters, multiple PR departments, and then you try to get shit done. It just doesn't happen. No. But, you know, any media person, if they cover the UFC and they need shit, they ask the PR, shit gets done, and we take it for granted how good and how well-oiled that this organization's PR department is, and a lot of that stems from the guidance and the direction that Dave helped instill from his time at the WEC and the whatnot going forward. So well-deserved, and kudos to him. And, you know, I mean – poor John Anik. I mean, I just feel bad for the guy, you know?
Got laid off just like that, man. That's crazy.
I hope he likes Philly.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Well, listen, this was the first of three UFC off weeks. So hopefully this wasn't the worst podcast you've ever listened to, because it's just us talking shit because we have nothing to cover. We're usually the road show. We're on the road. We were supposed to be in Manila.
We did go down the road from my house.
We were gonna be chilling. We were gonna be chilling with Derek Lewis, getting some.
That
would have
been gold.
Beast.
That would
have
been gold.
We were gonna have some BJ Penn, some stuff from the Prodigy, but yeah, that didn't happen. So hopefully hopefully people didn't shut it off.
We should call Derek next week.
That'd be fun. And yeah, because we got two more weeks of.
Two more weeks. Maybe we'll figure some stuff out. Maybe we'll try to get some gym visits.
Then we can go.
You guys
strong.
Should chime in if you want us to try to do some gym stuff. Maybe we'll work something out. I don't know.
Just tell us what to do.
Tell us. We got idle time.
We have no idea.
If not, we're just gonna end up back here at Boomers drinking more.
Totally. And that's probably not good for any of us. Because yeah. In the meantime, let me just say thanks for listening.
My Connor is so rusty right now. You read the Fook. It didn't sound like I was trying to go into Bisping. My feet.
They're all the same. The man of a thousand voices. They
or
all
one.
Sound the same.
I feel. Then I started sounding like a leprechaun. I feel, John. I think my lucky charms. The fucking Pat Lundvold. Fuck the bitch. Fuck Pat Lundvold. I like to stick my lucky charms in her. I'll teabag her with my lucky charms.